Good evening. I'm Mary Ellen Cubitt, filling in for Dorothy Graves, and this is Science Cafe Little Rock. Science Cafe is here on 89.1 KUAR, the fourth Tuesday of every month, to talk about a science topic and give you the chance to call with your questions. CRISPR gene editing technology is our topic tonight on Science Cafe, and the number to call with questions is 501-569-8494. Joining me in the studio is Dr. Charles O'Brien, professor of medicine and VA research scientist at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and the Central Arkansas Veterans Healthcare System. Dr. O'Brien, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Mary Ellen.
So, Dr. O'Brien, gene editing has been in the news even just as recently as yesterday. So can you give us just a little bit of basic information on gene editing?
Sure. So I think most people are probably familiar with gene therapy or the idea of gene therapy. There are many people who are born with a change or a difference in their in the sequence of their genes that cause conditions that can be very mild or sometimes very serious. I think many people are probably familiar with sickle cell disease or sickle cell anemia. And that disease, that condition is caused by a single base pair change in the gene that encodes beta hemoglobin, which is very important for red blood cells. And so it would be great if we could go in and change that single mutation, single base change back to what it should be, and that would essentially cure this condition. So gene therapy has been around, the idea has been around for a long time, and that can introduce usually a foreign piece of DNA into the genomic constitution of an individual, usually to make up for the lack of something. But gene editing is a different, newer form of this process in which we can go in and be much more specific and not necessarily introduce new DNA into a cell of a person or an animal or a plant, but go in and actually change the existing sequence to be very specific. For example, with sickle cell anemia, if the conditions are right, we could go in and change that single nucleotide change back to what it should be and essentially make normal hemoglobin again.
So is this where the breakthrough CRISPR comes in?
Exactly. So we've had the ability to do gene editing for some years. Back in the early 2000s, it was possible to do this process, but it was a fairly cumbersome process. We had to essentially engineer a new protein, which we call a nuclease, for every new sequence that we wanted to edit. What CRISPR-Cas-based gene editing allows us to do is to do this much more efficiently, faster, and less expensively.
Okay, so maybe we can break this down a little bit. When we say CRISPR technology, what are we actually talking about?
We're talking about a genetic tool or a molecular tool that we have co-opted or taken advantage of from bacteria. So the CRISPR system was first identified a long time ago, back in 1987, when a scientist in Japan started sequencing the genes of bacteria. And they noticed these funny sequences, these repetitive elements, this sequence happening over and over again in the bacterial genome, but they really didn't know its function. And so they continued to try to understand the function of these sequences for some time. And a few years later, they began to recognize that some of these sequences were from viruses that normally infected bacteria. And then a few years after that, a lot of work from many different labs around the world determined that the CRISPR system is present in many bacteria, and it's a kind of immune system, so that bacteria, when they're infected with a virus, like people are, they can form an immune response to that virus and be able to defend themselves against it mm-hmm. if they're ever infected by mm-hmm. it in the future. And the way they do that, the way the CRISPR system does that, it recognizes the incoming viral DNA and cuts it before it can work.
So almost like a chemical scissor?
Exactly. That's a good description.
Okay. So how does then CRISPR actually work? How does it actually cut part of the DNA?
Okay. So that's a little bit technical, but to really try to break it down, there are two important components to the CRISPR system. One is a protein. It's called Cas. And in the most common form of the system, it's called Cas9. And it's a protein that can cut double-stranded DNA. It cuts it on both strands of the DNA. And then the second part is a small RNA. It's about 85 base or nucleotides long. And it tells the Cas protein where to cut. And the important thing to remember is that it's very easy to change the sequence of that RNA so that we can tell it to go exactly to the place in the mm-hmm. genome we want it to cut and make the cut.
So that's how it locates a specific section of DNA to cut it. Exactly. And then replace it with some new piece of DNA?
Well, that is the part that we have a little less control over right now. So it's very easy to cut DNA, and then the natural repair machinery in the cell can glue it back together, but it frequently makes mistakes when that happens to create mutations.
You're listening to Science Cafe on 89.1 KUAR. We're live in the studio, and you can call in with your questions right now at 501-569-8494. Dr. O'Brien, let's continue on this line. I've heard that CRISPR can be used to edit the DNA of plants and animals and even humans.
That's true. In fact, unfortunately, it has been used to edit the DNA of humans, as far as we know. So there's only one instance that we know of this. It was two female children that were born in China. That it was a situation in which this investigator, Jun Kui He, announced at a scientific meeting that he had edited the DNA of these two children at the request of his parents. One of these children's parents was HIV positive, and the idea was that he wanted to have children that would be immune to be infection by HIV.
And this was just last year?
Just in 2018, November of 2018, that he announced it.
So he actually went in utero and edited the DNA of those twins.
It's a little complicated. To perform this kind of gene editing, an in vitro fertilization is performed, and then the fertilized egg is injected with the components of the CRISPR system, and the editing takes place in that fertilized embryo.
Okay, so what kind of human disorders might this gene editing CRISPR technology be able to help treat?
Well, if we go back to that example I mentioned earlier, the sickle cell anemia, there is, in fact, a clinical trial going on right now. That's one of four clinical trials going on in the United States. And in this particular instance, the CRISPR is not going in trying to edit the mutation that causes sickle cell anemia. It's an approach to try to reactivate a fetal form of hemoglobin that when overexpressed, can make up for some of the problems caused by the sickling protein. So they're not actually fixing the problem. They're reactivating a gene that's active during development to try to compensate for the problem caused by the mutation.
Okay. I've also heard that CRISPR is also being used in some potential cancer treatments. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So there are two clinical trials right now in the United States where CRISPR is being used as a form of gene editing to try and get a form of immune cell called a T lymphocyte to be very active against the cancer. I think one is a melanoma and one is myeloma, a form of blood cancer. And this is to create a type of cell that your listeners may be familiar with called a CAR T cell. That's, as you probably know, that T cells can target very specific antigens and usually a foreign antigen, but they can also target antigens or proteins present on the surface of cancer cells. And if you can make a lot of T cells specific for the protein on the surface of a cancer cell, your body might have the ability to go in and more effectively remove that or target that cancer. And so what CAR T cells are, they're genetically engineered cells that recognize a very specific protein on the surface of cancer cells. So there are two clinical trials for that right now. And the fourth trial in America is actually one for a congenital form of blindness.
This is Mary Ellen Cubitt filling in for Dorothy Graves this week on Science Cafe. You're listening to Dr. Charles O'Brien from UAMS. We're live. Please call in if you have any questions. Our number to call is 569-8494. So we talked a little bit about the application for sickle cell anemia, some possible cancer treatments, even some congenital blindness. Are there any other possibilities of CRISPR technology in the medical field?
Well, other than there are certainly several forms of genetic conditions that are would be great candidates. Mm-hmm. The most promising candidates right now are conditions in which we can get the cells that have the problem, get the progenitor cells from human tissue.
What's a progenitor cell?
So all of our the best example is the hematopoietic system or the blood system. All of our blood cells, the white blood cells, all the different types of white blood cells we have, the red blood cells, the platelets, they all come from a progenitor that we call a hematopoietic stem cell. And it's possible to harvest some of these hematopoietic stem cells from the circulation. And you can keep them alive in the lab, and they maintain this progenitor ability. And we can go in and we can make mutations like fix the sickle cell anemia gene or go in and reactivate this fetal hemoglobin. And then we can analyze those cells in the lab and make sure they have just the change that we want to make and no undesired mutations. And then we can put those back in the body and they'll go on to make all the types of blood cells that we have, but with the modification now.
So in some of the research that I was doing to get ready for our discussion tonight, I learned that CRISPR has a lot of possibility because it's, in a sense, quite easily to do and it's inexpensive. But could you talk a little bit about how much this might cost?
Well, to do the kinds of things that we do in the lab, like we work with certain cell types in the lab where we grow in culture dishes, doing gene modifications in those cells is very inexpensive. That's one of the great things about this technology is it's relatively inexpensive to order the reagents necessary to change the sequence that we'd like to cut. It's on the order of a few hundred dollars. However, for gene therapy approaches, as you can imagine, it's hugely more expensive. I've seen some estimates and some information on the internet that the estimates are somewhere between $500,000 to more than over $1 million. But I think it's important to keep in mind that in situations where you're going in and using it for gene therapy, it's likely to be a one treatment for the rest of your life. It's not the kind of thing where you're going to have to go in and retreat with a gene edit over and over again. In the case of sickle cell anemia, if they're successful in editing the hematopoietic stem cells and those engraft effectively in the patient, that could constitute a cure for those patients.
So in a sense, this technology can not only treat but cure certain genetic diseases like sickle cell anemia.
That's certainly the hope.
Okay, so you were talking about Dr. He in China, who performed some of this technology on the birth of two girls. Would you talk a little bit about kind of the fallout from that, kind of the controversy around performing this fairly new technology on humans?
Certainly, and the fallout has been really tremendous. So one of the first thing that happened at that meeting was quite a bit of condemnation from his fellow scientists. Scientists from across the world, formally in publications, in the news media, and in person, condemned this action as being premature at this time. Because even though CRISPR is very effective, there is the potential for having unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. There was quite a bit of activity after his announcement at the meeting. There was a publication just this last year suggesting that the gene that he changed, the mutation that he created, might have long-lasting effects on the lifespan, or have effects on the lifespan of individuals that have such a mutation. It turns out that the paper that mentioned this, it was published in the journal Nature, was retracted just a few days ago. And so it's not clear that the mutation that was created in these two young girls will have unintended consequences. But that's just the problem. We really don't know if there will be.
You're listening to Science Cafe, and we're live with Dr. Charles O'Brien from UAMS. So the Dr. He case really brings up a lot of ethical and potential legal issues. Would you talk a little bit about sort of the ethics debate that's going on in the science community right now about CRISPR?
Right. I think it's important to keep in mind that there are different types of changes that we can make and different stages we can do it at. So I don't think most people are having a problem with the idea of using gene editing or gene therapy to cure diseases or to treat diseases like sickle cell anemia. And in those cases, we're treating cells and creating mutations or changes that won't be passed on to children of those people that are treated. I think most people have a problem with or want to take or slow down and discuss what will happen if we make changes that will be passed on to our descendants. And that's the case with the modifications that were made in the Chinese babies, was that those changes are permanent and they're in the so-called germ cells of those two young people. That when they mature, if they decide to have kids, there's a likelihood that they'll pass on that genetic modification to their children.
Is that what scientists mean then by germline editing?
Exactly.
Okay, just in June, the Nature Journal talked about a Russian biologist, Rebikov, who announced plans to possibly CRISPR edit even more babies.
He is planning to do that, yes. If he can obtain permission from the appropriate Russian authorities, he intends to make a very similar modification to the same gene that was modified in the Chinese event.
Mm-hmm. So let's actually maybe take a moment to talk about some of the dangers of CRISPR technology and gene editing. This frightens a lot of kind of general folks out in the community.
Well, I think it's like a lot of things. It has a lot of potential for good and a lot of potential for misuse. One very provocative use that's been reported in the literature is the use of gene editing to create something known as a gene drive.
Mm.
And this is something that, for example, most people are familiar with malaria, the malarial parasite, and it's transmitted by mosquitoes. We know enough about the biology of that system that we can go in and modify the genes of the mosquitoes so that they're still viable, they're still happy, but they can no longer harbor the parasite that causes malaria. And so it might be possible with these gene drives to introduce that mutation into a population of mosquitoes, and then those mosquitoes would pass that genetic modification on to their offspring and into the wild population in a way that's different than traditional Mendelian genetics. Instead of being able to pass only one copy of the mutant gene to the offspring, the gene drive causes both copies of the offspring to have the mutation so that it doesn't spread normally. It spreads at a much more rapid rate and essentially or potentially an unstoppable rate. It would create a mutation that would spread throughout the wild population uncontrollably.
So does that mean we could actually eliminate mosquitoes?
Well, you could eliminate the ability of mosquitoes to harbor the parasite, but you could also potentially create a mutation in an agriculturally important crop that would cause it to be less nutritious or perhaps harmful, and then that mutation potentially could spread throughout the entire population of plants.
Okay, our phone number tonight is 501-569-8494. You're listening to Science Cafe on 89.1, and we're live in the studio with Dr. Charles O'Brien. Some who are talking about the ethics of CRISPR technology on humans worry that, in a sense, we might be letting technology create children rather than normal human reproduction. And folks fear this idea of the designer baby.
Right. That's a very popular topic as well. The idea of enhancement, I think, is kind of beyond what most people would desire, it seems. But there's some interest, I think, in the intelligence community of trying to understand what foreign governments are thinking about in mm-hmm. terms of modifying human performance. I have to emphasize this. There's so much we don't know about what causes certain traits, certainly when it comes to intelligence or performance. But there are some relatively straightforward gene changes that we're aware of that can, for example, increase muscle mass quite dramatically or increase bone strength quite dramatically. And so you can imagine that a nefarious organization or government entity that wanted to create individuals that were very strong and had essentially mm-hmm. unbreakable bones, if they wanted to create that, the potential for that does exist at this point.
Hmm. And I think that's quite concerning to some people in terms of the ethics. So what are governments in general doing about regulation or kind of keeping track of the science?
Well, there's a real mixed bag on that. So in the United States right now, it's technically not illegal to genetically modify the germline, but no federal funds can be used for any studies of that kind. So there's very limited funding for that kind of thing in the United States. When it comes to other countries, some countries have mm-hmm. Created outright bans on human genome editing or germline editing, whereas there's countries are kind of in between. So some places it's legal, some places it's not.
So because it's legal right now in the United States, that's why we have those clinical trials currently underway.
Right, but it's important to emphasize or remember that those are somatic mutations. Those will not cause germline mutations.
Okay. And that is approved in the normal clinical trial process with the...
Yes, it's occurring in the context of a normal approved clinical trial.
Okay. We actually have a question right now from Radiance in Little Rock. Radiance, can you hear us? I think we might have accidentally just lost Radiance there, but I see her question here that she told our producer was, can you speculate, Dr. O'Brien, on some of the potential problems with germ editing in mosquitoes?
Well, I guess one possibility, there's always the possibility of unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of creating mosquitoes that would no longer harbor the Plasmodium falciparum parasite sounds like a good idea. And it certainly might, it could potentially eliminate most forms of malaria. However, we have no idea what impact such a change would have on the rest of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Mosquitoes do more things than just bite humans. They are a food supply for many different organisms. And so introducing a mutation like that could have really unintended consequences. And since most things are connected, having unintended effects on other aspects, other individual or the types of organisms in the biosphere could indirectly come back and have effects on us as well.
You're listening to Science Cafe. We have just a few minutes left if you want to call in with one last question. Our phone number is 569-8494, and we're in the studio live with Dr. Charles O'Brien. So let's go and talk a little bit more about some of the current research that's going on with CRISPR. Can you think of maybe go into a little bit more detail about what possibilities this might have for people in the future, in the next few years, maybe speculate on when this kind of technology might be able to help kind of the average individual suffering from sickle cell anemia?
Well, the clinical trials are already, I think NPR has actually talked to one of those individuals. So people are benefiting from even the clinical trials even now. And I think that's the biggest effort right now is to make the technology safer, to make it more specific for the changes that we want to make and create things that don't have off-target effects so that only the change that we intend to create is the one that's created, and developing technology to be sure that that's has occurred and to introduce those modified cells back into the body safely. I think most efforts are going to be focused on that.
Well, what might make it possibly unsafe?
The first gene therapy trials that occurred in the early 2000s were very effective at targeting the gene that they wanted to create. But at the same time, in a subset of patients, they created a type of cancer, a type of leukemia. So you have to be very sure that you make only the change that you intend to make.
Well, thank you so much tonight for joining us, Dr. Charles O'Brien. If you'd like to keep chatting with us, please join Science Cafe at Hibernia Irish Tavern on Rodney Parham Road. Linda Williams will be there from 7 to 9 tonight to broaden our discussion on gene editing. He'll be joined by Andrew Schruko from Hendricks College and Doug Corbett from UCA's Honors Program. Panelists will be discussing the opportunities and risks of CRISPR technology. We're going to have a great night. Please join us. Thank you again, Dr. O'Brien, for being here. From 89.1 KUIR and Science Cafe, I'm Mary Ellen Cubitt.